have to cut you off. We got 5 seconds.
Love
you ready?
You got it. Carry on.
Welcome to another great issue we have here of Beyond the Cover. We are so happy to have you guys coming, listening to us, however, wherever, whenever you listen to the show. I will be doing it by myself tonight. My fabulous co-host Jeff Ayers had to bow out. He had something that he had to do, so I will be taking over the reins tonight. But you know what? It's going to be nice. It's going to be easy. It's going to be fun because we have none other than author D.P. Lyle on to talk about his latest book that is out. It is book 3 of his Jake Longley series. It is called Sunshine States. We're going to get into that with him. We want to remind everybody to please make sure you visit Kensington Books and see what they got going on. You just visit kensingtonbooks.com for more information on their authors and their stuff that goes on. We're going to be back in 2 weeks, and we're going to play an exciting interview for you that we did with Blake Crouch. And we're going to be talking about his book, Recursion, which is right after Dark Matter. He's got some cool little tidbits about Dark Matter in that interview, too, so you're not going to want to miss that. But without any further ado, we are going to bring on our good friend here, none other than author D.P. Lyle. So, Doug, how you doing, man?
Great, man. How you doing, John?
Oh, it's always good, always good. I love doing this, talking to you guys about your books, and especially now, new series, of course. New in the sense that it's book 3, but it's
right.
Not Samantha Cody or Dub Walker. It's a little on the more lighthearted side for people who have not picked up the first book, which is Deep Six, and then A-List, and now Sunshine State. So why don't you tell everybody about what you got going on, and maybe you start with Deep Six and kind of just work your way a little forward into what you got.
Yeah, well, Deep Six was the first in the series, and Jake is an ex-professional baseball player who owns a bar on the sand in Gulf Shores, Alabama. And his ambition is to run the bar and chase bikinis, basically. That's his whole goal in life. He's not the most ambitious guy in the world. That's why I love him. And his dad, Ray, is an ex, who knows, some kind of military psyops guy, black ops guy. Nobody really knows what Ray did back in the day, as they say. But he's a PI, and he keeps trying to rope Jake into his business, but Jake will have nothing of it. And in Deep Six, when I started that book, I really had absolutely no idea where it was going to go. I just decided, let's just tell a story and see what happens. So I had a scene in mind, and the scene was Ray had roped Jake into surveilling a house in a very high-rent neighborhood in the Perdido Bay area down in Gulf Shores area. And he's parked and watching this house, and you know, he has a few drinks and he goes to sleep because it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And he was parked right in front of his ex-wife's house, who divorced him and married the attorney that fleeced him. And so she wakes him up by beating his car to death with a 5-iron. And while Jake has extricated himself from all of that, of course, the woman who he's surveilling somehow gets murdered in her house and nobody knows. And Jake doesn't even find out until the next day. So he's not a very competent PI. But I had that scene in mind, and that was really it. And I just started writing, and the story just unfolded. And, of course, then he met Nicole, his love interest, during that scene. A little bit later, she saw the whole thing coming down the road, et cetera. And Deep Six is a story of greed and graft and corruption and murder, and then Jake gets involved in that.
But
they solve the puzzle. They solve the puzzle. Yeah, a lot of humor. A lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of humor. I like that.
And working through A-List now.
Yeah, A-List. Then Nicole, who's now Jake's love interest, her uncle is a big-time A-List Hollywood producer type, and he has one of his franchise things called Space Quest filming in New Orleans in the swamps. It's called Swamp Wars. You know, think Star Wars and that kind of stuff. But her uncle Charles is often France shooting another movie, and so his franchise actor, a guy named Kirk Ford, wakes up in the Hotel Monteleone with a dead co-ed in his bed, and it turns out she is the niece of a mafioso type in the Big Easy. So Jake and Nicola go over there to figure out what's going on, and of course, things go sideways. Of course.
Of course.
Of course.
And then now we come into Sunshine State, which is out now, just got released, and now you're into book three. So what kind of mishaps and things you got going on in this one?
Well, this one's really bizarre. Longley Investigation, Ray's company, gets hired through the attorney of a serial killer named Billy Wayne Baker, who is in Rayford, which is Union Correctional, very high-tech maximum security prison in North Florida. And Billy Wayne has killed seven people and confessed to all of them, and his DNA was found at all of them. And he made the confessions to avoid the death penalty, so he's serving seven consecutive life sentences. So Billy Wayne's not going anywhere. But he hires them to prove that he didn't do two of the killings, that they were set up. And, you know, they're not sure they believe Billy Wayne. And is he just gaming the system? Is he trying to get more fame? You know, is he just, you know, messing around with everybody? So they have to go over there and unravel this and find out if Billy Wayne's telling the truth, and if so, which two cases, because Billy Wayne will not tell them which two, because he says it'll bias their investigation, and he wants them to find it on their own. And they have to find the two that he says he didn't do, and if he didn't do them, prove that, and who did. So it's totally insane.
And the one thing that you always like to do, like you said, you know, this is kind of bizarre, but you like to experiment with things too. I mean, you know, you went from snake handling preachers,
right,
and a bunch of other stuff. What is it about, like, that exploration and those weird kind of, I guess, human events, or just what weird humans do, I guess, that kind of excites you?
I get bored easily, I guess. I'm always looking for new ideas and things to do and different styles of writing. And, you know, like this comedic series is something totally different. You know, most of my other stuff is the Dub Walker series was more dark, and it was a forensics procedural. And then the Sam Cody series had a little bit of woo-woo in it. You know, there was always some metaphysical where at the end you're not sure if that really happened or was it just perceived that way. And I just decided I wanted to write some comedy and do something a little funnier and lighter and not such a slave to fact. You know, you can have serendipity and happenstance and hyperbole and stupid stuff and still spin a good story with a lot of funny people.
And, you know, you said that you kind of thought of that scene, and that's kind of how Jake Longley was born. But you also had to have kind of Jake in the back of your mind. When did you start having that itch and you started to kind of feel his coming of age, per se, I guess, when you finally started wanting to write?
Well, it kind of all happened at the same time, but I didn't want Jake to be a serious character. I mean, I wanted him to be seriously unserious,
right,
let's put it that way. I wanted him to be one of these guys that life comes pretty easy to, and he's not very ambitious, but everybody likes him. You know, he likes people and people like him. But he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but yet he's got his moments, and he's not the most ambitious guy, but yet he can get focused on something and solve the problem like most people can. Even the most type B person you know can get focused on something. And so Jake's life is good. He doesn't want to do anything different, but he constantly gets drug into situations where he is a fish out of water. He's a stranger in a strange land. He doesn't live in Ray's world. He doesn't understand all of that, but he constantly gets drug right into the middle of it. So I like that dynamic.
Well, you kind of mentioned about that you kind of get bored easily, but it's not because you don't watch Live PD, because we all know, and I know, of course, that you do. And
we watched
a
lot of
it, that
we?
I always say, and we were talking about it, and like I told you, I was just like, you know, watching stupid never gets old. I mean, it just never gets old. And that's kind of like, I guess, in the writing, because, you know, when you're writing like Jake, and it just seems like he never gets old, because there is that quirkiness in the writing and the comedic, and it just seems like, you know, you're not even close to even being like done with him.
Oh, no, not even close. And I'm having fun with him. I like the fact that with him, it can be serious, but it can be funny. And it can be happenstance, but it can be things that work. But also, Jake has internal dialogue. He has a quirky view of the world. He has a quirky view of people. And he will even talk to the audience sometimes. He'll talk to himself sometimes, you know, in his head. And he just has this thing about kind of trying to figure out who's what, when, where, and how. But he doesn't really understand it all the time. And that's what I like about him. He's sometimes clueless. Now, Nicole, on the other hand, is never clueless. And she's always hitting him upside the head. You know, what are you thinking? You know, that kind of thing. And I like that dynamic. It kind of, I think we talked about this once, it took me a couple of books to realize that what it really was the old Tracy Hepburn dynamic. And I love Tracy.
Oh, yeah.
Movies. You know, Adam's Rib's one of my favorite movies all time. And they lock horns. And she is tough. She's smarter than him. And she's tougher than him. And he just gets exasperated all the time. You know, that was the Tracy character. And I love Spencer Tracy. To me, he's one of the greatest actors that ever lived. So those stories resonated with me. And so I didn't realize, writing this series, that really these were the Tracy Hepburn characters again. And I like that.
Nice. And when you kind of look at your writing in a whole, because you have done, you know, three different series, three totally different series, and then we're going to talk about what you got coming up here in October because you have a new series coming out. How would you kind of label yourself kind of as a writer if you're kind of sitting down and someone's picking you up maybe at Sunshine State or, you know, another book for the first time, like, oh, what, you know, what do you write? How would you kind of explain that to them?
Well, I guess it's just stories. You know, I like stories. I love all kinds of stories. I read all the time. I read a lot of different people, people that write a lot of different ways. You know, my two favorite.
You watch a lot of different TV.
I watch a lot of different TV shows.
You give up a lot of different shows.
I watch series. I watch movies. I read a lot. I just absorb all this. And I just love a good yarn. And at the end of the day, I want to spend a good yarn. And I hope other people say, hey, you know, that was fun. I enjoyed that story. If they learned something, great. But main thing, were they entertained and did they enjoy it? I just like storytelling.
And in this, like, hypersensitive world we have right now of the PC, which I feel has gone a little on the overboard side, but, you know, is it difficult when you're kind of writing and you have to maybe keep some of those things in mind just because of the world that we live in? Or do you not even think about it and even care, and whatever comes out just comes out?
I would never consider it. It's just a form of dishonesty. You know, I've just, you know, you just tell the truth. You ban one word, you ban all words. You ban one book, you ban all books. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
The First Amendment and my belief system is that you ought to be able to say what you want, when you want. If somebody wants to hit you in the mouth, that's their problem. And if they do, then fine. But if you pull your punches, if you lie to yourself, if you're not true to your characters, if you're not true to your story, then what's the point? You know, at the end of the day, what's the point? No one has the constitutional right not to get their feelings hurt. And if it hurts your feelings, I'm sorry, but that's your problem. It's not my problem. I'm just trying to tell a story. That's all. And I don't go out intentionally. I don't go out with political agendas in my stories. I don't go out with social agendas. I don't like to read books that hammer you over the head with all that stuff because, good Lord, that's every minute of every day. What I want is a good yarn, well told, that will entertain me and make me happy. That's it. That's what it's all about.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and you definitely see, you know, some of the writing today, I think it does fall into that trap, and I think that that's unfortunate. And I think you did put it right. You know, you ban one book, you got to ban them all, because somebody's going to be upset with, I'm looking at my library right now of the books that we got, you know, we probably got a good 1,000, and somebody's going to be pissed at every single one of these books about something. I mean, it's just the way it is.
Sure, and that's okay. If they want to be there,
that's fine.
That's absolutely, they can do that.
Don't watch it.
Don't,
you know,
read it. Don't watch
it.
Don't buy it.
You don't have to read it, and you don't have to watch it.
Right.
But, you know, when you do, and like you said, you have to be truthful to the characters, because if when you do find authors that are truthful to the characters, the one thing that always follows is fantastic writing. You can't you can't have one without the other. You just can't.
Absolutely. And some of the great writers out there, they just create characters that are earthy and real. And, you know, you go back to the age of noir, you know, with Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler. You know, that stuff, you look at through today's lens, and it's like, oh, my God. You know, these people were awful. No, they weren't. They were just characters. They were doing what those characters did. And if you didn't create those, if those writers hadn't have created those characters that way and made them who they were, we wouldn't even know who they were right now.
Yeah, true.
But I never heard their names. And I just, it's a firm belief of mine. You just write your story. If you got your little editor worrying about word choice and this and that and, you know, how people are going to perceive it, then maybe you ought to go do something else.
Yeah. How far back do you kind of go memory banks wise? Do you kind of go back to maybe when you were like 15, 16 and remember like that teacher or maybe that police officer in the town or something like that and kind of, you know, use those kinds of for bases for different kind of secondary characters? Or do you just kind of just get them up off the fly depending on what the story tells?
I probably go back even earlier than that, but the point is that I think every person you've ever known, every person you've ever met, every character you've ever read or seen on TV or in a movie, they all kind of filter in there, and you take bits and pieces because that's your experience, and you create characters from your experience. You don't pattern them after a single person, but they kind of all come together, and you have this idea for this character, and you just say, hey, you know, I like this guy doing this or this girl doing that, and I like this kind of thing, and I like them being this way or talking this way or walking this way, and then you just kind of create them. Often they will evolve, especially when you start a new series and you have your first book. Those characters from the beginning to the time you finish the first draft aren't really the same people. They've kind of evolved because you've got to know them better. And then hopefully what comes out of the end is someone that people care about and will follow and listen to and enjoy their stories. Obviously, with series characters, once you finish that first book, you're pretty much stuck with the way they are.
Yeah.
You can't dramatically change them after that.
No,
I mean,
you
Jack
kinda
Reacher's
gotta,
Jack
if
Reacher,
I,
you know, he's not going to change.
Yeah, you kind of got to go maybe a little bit slow to kind of change them, and maybe there's some big dramatic event that does it, but yeah, you're right. I mean, they kind of are what they are.
No, and people ask that question all the time. How do you keep a series, a character fresh, you know, and how
You
have a character arc? Well, you can't really have much of a character arc, because if you do, you know, 20 books later, they're not recognizable anymore. And, you know, Jack Reacher, you know, Lee Child's done a great job with Jack Reacher, but he's basically the same as he was in Killing Floor. You know, he's smart, he's tough, he'll kill you, he'll do whatever's necessary, he'll solve the problem. He's basically the Shane character. He comes to town and solves problems. Well, if he evolved greatly, then he wouldn't be Jack Reacher. He'd be somebody else. But what you do is you take that character that people like and you throw obstacles and problems and story at them, and they have to solve the problem. And that's storytelling.
Yeah, I guess if he made Reacher buy a house in the suburbs, that would probably be like, what the hell happened? So I just did it with the Twilight Zone, and then he called the book The Twilight Zone, and Jack Reacher bought a house in the suburbs.
Wait a minute, if he even bought a backpack, it would be a great
change. That's true, too. You know, we've talked about this before, and I know that you have said that you thought Hannibal Lecter was probably the best villain ever written. And so I'm kind of wondering, what traits do you kind of make sure that your villain has that you think are very important in a villain?
Well, I think the single most important thing, and I think a lot of writers lose this, is that the villain is the hero of their own story. Well, they think what they're doing is righteous and right, and that they have a goal in mind, and they have a purpose in mind, and they have a direction, and they have plans. and they have fears and they have wants and needs and skills, but they're directed toward a solution, a goal, an object, some event. They're directed, and their focus is on making that happen. Well, it turns out that that is 180 degrees opposed to what the protagonist is trying to do, and therefore there's a conflict. But never forget that the antagonist is the hero of his own story, and he has a story. And if you lose sight of that, I think then they become flatter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that, you know, when you're talking like this, it's funny that you mentioned, because I was going to say repeat that again. But if people want to understand another thing that you do is you, and I'm going to shift it just a little bit because this is like a craft fest lesson that you've just given aspiring writers. And that's coming up soon, which is part of Thriller Fest. And if they go to the Thriller Fest website and see Craft Fest, you just look and see the types of panels that people are going to be talking about and who's going to talk about them and stuff like that is mentioned a lot. And, you know, you started Craft Fest and you started to help writers become better. You know, why is that important for you?
Oh, I think, you know, getting really smarmy. I mean, humans should teach other humans. I mean, if you want to go that big. You know, you learn from your parents, you learn from your aunts and uncles, you learn from your classmates, you learn from your coaches and your teachers and all that. But you should always be either learning something or teaching something, because that's just the way of the world. And knowledge is not worth much if it's not passed on. And remember, in the old days, way back, you know, when people sat around campfires and, you know, hunted rabbits with sticks, the only entertainment or the only education or the only way to better the tribe, as it were, was to tell stories. Stories about hunting, stories about storms, stories about house building or cave dwellings or whatever. They had to share that information. And that, I think that goes back into human DNA back to the beginning. So I think that's what you do. I think you just educate people. And from a writer's point of view, I find the writer's community incredibly generous. I mean, for Craft Fest, I've never had problem finding enough teachers to teach classes, because they want to help. They want to lift the boat. They want to create the next generation of writers, and because they want to read their stories. They want to know what these people have to say. And they, you know, like I said, we all read. You cannot write if you don't read. It can't happen. That's not going to happen.
Can't
do it.
Yeah, I mean, you might be able to put words on a page, but there's a lot different than putting words on a page and actually telling a story. And I think that a lot of self-published authors need to kind of remember that. You know,
yeah, I agree.
Think there's some good self-published authors, but I think
there's
a lot that need help.
Of course. And it's, you know, this is obviously a big controversy, and there's a lot of discussion about it writers' conferences and when writers get together, you know, about self-publishing and all that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I think you have to decide what your goals are and where you want to be, and then be patient and take your time and learn the craft and get better at what you do. If you just write your first book, I mean, God forbid, my first book was awful, and my agent told me so. And I would just absolutely be mortified if that book in its original form ever saw the light of day. Because
we'd have to wonder what
absolutely
dug on.
Awful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? But you wrote it and you learned from it. And that's a big thing too, is if you can learn from it and go back through it and learn and be like, you know what? There might be a story or a character in here that I could actually use at a later date. And sometimes, you know, you just never know.
Well, that original story, you know, 10 years later, it was 50,000 words shorter, because it started at 138, and it got down to the mid-80s, and it changed titles four times and locations four times and protagonist once. The only thing that stayed the same was the bad guy in the basic story, but it basically became Stress Fracture, the first Dub Walker book. It took 10 years and 27 rewrites. Now, I published a lot of other stuff in between, but everything I did, I learned and got better, but I would not give up on that story. And so, but I wasn't ready, and it wasn't ready. And I think that's what self-published authors need to stop and think about. What's your goal in life? If you want to be a serious professional writer, take your time, work hard, get better. Take that 5-10 years, whatever it takes. I'm sorry, it takes time. You know, so did medical school. But you got to learn your craft.
And you
got to do all that stuff, and then you're ready. And then you're ready to do something that you'll be proud of the rest of your life.
Yeah, the instant gratification of people today, I think, is a bad thing. I don't think people want to take the time and really take the time to get things right. And I think that that's bad. But, you know,
don't
you're
exploring
yourself
short.
Again.
Don't ever sell yourself short.
And, you know, you're exploring yourself again because you have two other characters that are coming up in a book called Skin in the Game. And I'm going to just say what it is because I know what it is because we're publishing it.
Yes, you are.
It's been publishing. It's publishing this. It's a Kane Harper thriller series, brand new, called Skin in the Game, coming out in October. So give us a little preview of why you decided to kind of, you know, do almost two series a year now with Jake Longley and now Kane Harper.
Well, this is a story that has been rattling around, and these characters have been rattling around in my head for a number of years while I was doing other stuff and writing other novels. And I remember I sat in a bar with my friend Paul Haley, and I told him and his wife the story probably 3 years ago. And we were sitting over dinner, and they were both just, their mouths were hanging open. And Paul said, "You absolutely have to write this." I said, "I know, but I'm not quite there yet. It needs to percolate some more." And then it did. But Bobby Kane and Harper McCoy were two kids that were raised by a gypsy family, not true Roma gypsies, but a bunch of con artists and thieves that ran around the South. And trust me, there were a lot of those, especially when I was growing up, and they're still there. And they go around and put on shows and stuff. Well, Bobby was basically left abandoned in a Houston bus station at a very, very young age, like months, and the family scooped him up. And Harper was purchased from her drunken, alcoholic, half Cherokee mother, you know, for a couple $100 and some bottles of Wild Turkey.
Just the way you say that is just freaking hilarious.
Well,
it is. Cherokee mother.
So they ended up being. They ended up being like brother and sister, though Harper's a year older, but they grew up together, you know, and they were 3 years old. They slept in the same bed. They were raised by the same aunt and uncle, as it were. And so they basically learned skills. Bobby became an expert with a knife. At age 7, was known as Bobby Blade. He could throw knives, and Harper was often the target, holding balloons and stuff and spinning on a wheel. And Harper was a con artist. She could con anybody out of anything. Well, at age 12, 13, family gets disrupted by the FBI. Everybody gets hauled off. They get separated. They get adopted. They never see each other for 15 years. And then they end up on the other side of the world in one of the desert communities over there where war is. And Bobby has become basically an assassin, a military assassin, because he's so good at second story work. He can sneak in and out of any place, and he can kill with a knife. So he becomes a guy who can go out and take out a bomb maker in the middle of Fallujah, and nobody even knows he's there. And Harper goes to the Navy and becomes into PsyOps and ends up in the CIA running ops. Well, she's running an op, and they insert Bobby at the last minute because things change, you know, war is fluid, and they run into each other. Hadn't seen each other in a long time. Well, other things happen. They end up leaving the military, and, of course, now they are what you would call fixers, and they get hired by people to go out and solve problems by whatever means are necessary. And they use their gypsy skills and their military skills to make all this happen. I love these characters. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah, and just so people know, I mean, there really are, you know, gypsies today that still are in the United States, around the world.
Well, and I mean, there's real gypsies, you know, the Romans. I mean, they really are. And you know, and obviously Hitler tried to wipe them out too, but they survived. And there used to be gypsy families in the South when I was growing up going around, but there's also families that are called gypsy families, but they're not anywhere ethnically, they're not. They're just people who go around and are kind of, but a lot of them work construction, but they're always on the move, and they're picking up odd jobs, you know, here and there and moving around all the time. Mm-hmm. And so they get the name Gypsy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fabulous book, and coming out in October again, Skin in the Game. You can check that one out. Well, Doug, what's the best place for people to find out about more information on you?
Go to my website, dplylemd.com. It's dplylemd.com. And if you go there, you can see all about the books. You can connect to my blog. You can connect to my podcast, Criminal Mischief, the Art and Science of Crime
Fiction. Oh,
that's
right. We didn't even talk about that.
Yeah, and to the old radio show that Jan Burke and I did for 3.5 years called Crime and Science Radio. All the shows are on there. You can listen to them right on the website. And great interviews. So just go to that website and you can connect to everything.
You know, and, what was I just going to say? I was going to ask a question. And I just totally slipped my head. It did, because you mentioned something about
podcast.
Yeah, no, it was about your website. Oh, the other thing too, and you know, this kind of goes back to the Crowd Fest. But for authors, you know, and we've gotten some emails too. Is that people can also email you questions,
right? Exactly.
Medical questions, and you'll respond back to them. And so give us like one or two that kind of come off your head as an example that people have emailed you about for, you know, in their book.
Yeah, if you go to the website, there's a way, you know, under the contact link, you can see how to ask a question. There's certain rules involved, but you can send the questions, and I'll get to them usually pretty quickly, but as quickly as I can. It seems like the big topics are what dead bodies look like under various circumstances and how far decayed they are. And poisons. Poisons are always huge. Everybody wants to know about poisons and, you know, how they work and what they look like and, you know, how you can get them into people and how they discover them and uncover them. But a lot of things like that. And I've gotten everything from vampire blood to zombies to, you know, bodies on the moon and bodies on Mars and, you know, how Abraham Lincoln died and would he be alive today and how did David kill Goliath? I mean, it's really amazing the questions I've gotten over the years.
But pretty much any medical question that's like that, you know,
yeah,
like a body or how something's going to happen.
Like
or
yeah,
like if somebody's 15 feet away with a .45 revolver and shoots the guy and hits him in the, you know, in the
right
left ear, what's going to be torn off? You know,
yeah.
What would that look like?
Are they going to survive?
Like,
and if so, how are they going to survive?
Right.
And what's going to have to be done, et cetera?
Right.
Yeah. All that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Doug, it's always great to have you on.
Always a pleasure.
Talk about your stuff. Yeah, it's all. And, you know, Sunshine State is out now, so people can get into it again. That is book 3 in the Jake Longley series. If you haven't read the first two, it's Deep Six and A-List, and they are also available, of course, however you buy books. But go to Amazon and definitely check it out. So, Doug, again, thank you so much, man, for coming on. It's always a pleasure.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, you have a good one.
You too.
All right, bye-bye. So again, everybody, that is Doug Lyle. Go to dplylemd.com for more information on all of his writing. You will see all of his books on there, including like Dub Walker, Samantha Cody, and then Forensics for Dummies and a couple other forensics books. If you're a writer and you need reference material, you definitely need to get at least one of those books that you should have with you, especially if you write police procedurals and things that call for forensics and any kind of medical knowledge in there, because you don't want to screw that stuff up in your writing. Make sure you check out those books that Doug wrote, those nonfiction books also. And again, Sunshine State is out now, so make sure you check that out. We're going to be back again in 2 weeks, so we want to thank you all for listening, and we are going to play that Blake Crouch interview. He's talking about his latest book, Recursion. Blake was a great interview. We were lucky to be able to get him on again to talk to him. And he talks a little bit about dark matter and some of the stuff that he has going on there and like new television series and things that he's working on. So if you know Blake, of course, he's the one who wrote and started Wayward Pines, which was the Fox series. That was his invention. and that was his story. So you like that kind of stuff, you're definitely going to want to listen to this. So, again, thank you all so much for joining us. We will see you all in 2 weeks. And until next time, like we say, keep reading. See y'all next time.